Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Today's episode is brought to you by the incredible Rad Roller Mobility Tools, my absolute favorite tools for self-myofascial release for at-home treatment for all aches, pains, and mobility issues. Check out the link in our show notes below and use the special offer code HEALING20 to get a special 20% discount on your first order. Enjoy today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson. And with us today, oh, I should have asked how to say this last name. I got stuck on Brandt.
Should I help you? And
you think you should help me?
Passalacqua. Passalacqua.
Passalacqua. I think I could have gotten there. And you know what? We're just going to roll with this. So we have Brandt Passalacqua with us today. Brandt is where I'm going to stick now. Brandt is the creator of Breathing Deeply Yoga Therapy. He has been enjoying yoga and the healing arts since 2001 after overcoming obesity and a life-threatening autoimmune illness. His personal injury serves as an inspiration for countless others and informs his compassionate, humorous, and down-to-earth teaching style. Brandt shares what he knows through training programs in Breathing Deeply Yoga, Peace Weight Loss through Yoga, and the Breathing Deeply Meditation Sangha. So Brandt, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to dive into some of these other aspects of yoga and wellness and breathing that we haven't, you know, really gotten to specifically on the podcast before. So thank you for bringing your journey and inspiration to the show.
Great. Thank you. So glad to be here.
Well, so we got a little bit of taste from your bio, but can you tell us kind of where you started and how you found yoga and found it to be so helpful for yourself?
Yeah, sure. I got started the way most people get started, which is never having done yoga and having something happen to them that made them do yoga. Maybe that's not true now, but I'm old enough that that's how most people had come to yoga. So I got, I was a musician and I smoked 4 packs a day and I had, let's just say my lifestyle was not ideal. And then I was working on my house one day and I got sick with this really bad autoimmune disease. And I was in the hospital and I almost died. I didn't die, but the prognosis wasn't good. It was looking like maybe I wouldn't get better or I would have some organs removed. It just wasn't, you know, a positive prognosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like anyone, I was like looking for stuff to do, to help myself. And I, learned this practice, yoga nidra. And that was the first kind of yoga practice I did, which is basically meditation on your back. I mean, that's the very short version, but you know, it's like progressive relaxation and a bunch of things, getting into all your bodies, as they say in yoga. So your energetic body and your physical body and sort of dropping down through your whole system. And when I was recovering, I couldn't sit up without passing out. So I had a lot of time to do this. So I did that quite a bit and that helped me tremendously. And so I was like, wow, this yoga thing's really awesome. and then I started taking yoga classes and I really liked that. And I had been obese. And once I got back into like sort of taking yoga classes, and the yoga classes were pretty mellow. They weren't like power vinyasa or something like we have today. But, you know, they were these kind of like middle of the road hatha classes. I went once a week and then I practiced all week. And one time the teacher after a few weeks was like, wow, you're really progressing quite well for someone who's brand new. You've only been here like 3 times or 2 times. And I said, well, yeah, I go home and I do the practice every day. She's like, you do it every day? Cause like nobody does that. But my only sort of thing I'd done in my life was like judo as a kid. And I was like, well, I guess I'm supposed to practice this every day. So I did. So it helped me a lot. And I recovered. I mean, the short version of the story is I recovered. And as I recovered, you know, it's not the only thing I did, but it helped me lose a lot of weight. So that was amazing. So I went from like a maybe not going to make it obese person to a really healthy, not obese person in a kind of relatively short amount of time, like over a year and a half, 2 years. And then I just decided that's what I wanted to do. So, you know, I studied a lot of yoga and became a yoga teacher, and then studied with a man named Kunta Stiles, who was a yoga therapist, and he had one of the two yoga therapy programs in the US. I didn't know that at the time. So I got to study with him and I learned a lot from him. And then I became a yoga therapist. And, you know, my primary work in the beginning was with obesity and eating disorders, but that expanded quick because it turns out people with obesity and eating disorders are people. And they have other things. So yoga therapy covers a really wide span. So I started working with clients and I was really blessed. I got to work. I was living in Brooklyn at the time. And I worked in Manhattan for years as a yoga therapist, which was very rare, like made a living doing that. And then eventually I started the school we have today. So that's kind of my my trajectory.
Well, I love the whole journey of it, and that yoga served you so well to come out of such a severe and not very optimistic prognosis to being you know, not just alive but healthy and in a position to help and teach others here today. I mean, there's just so much that can be wrapped up in that. And I know you said that yoga wasn't the only thing you did. And I really feel like that's worth highlighting, lest anyone can think that yoga is going to cure everything. It's very powerful and useful in and of itself. but it sometimes gets the rap. Like, oh, just go
but, to yoga. But it is the primary, I will, to be full disclosure, it was the primary thing I did. I think I added that in there because I also changed my eating patterns. It's not like I was doing yoga and eating Twinkies and losing hundreds of pounds. I mean, as you might guess.
Well, and so that's kind of my question. It's like, because it is often the primary thing. It is the foundational thing for these incredible changes that can happen. What is it, do you think, about your experience with yoga and the meditation that allowed it to be that much of a foundational change, going from such a stark prognosis to where you are now?
It's a really good question. I mean, I think there's probably a few aspects. I think the primary one is is that it gives you agency over your own process. So there you are with your body and your mind, and there's a lot there, and you know, as you know, there's so many ways that our health is influenced that are so subtle. And I think yoga in particular, and I would say yoga therapy, because I think it's more important to see it as something that's specific to you as opposed to like going to a yoga class, because that's not necessarily going to fit the bill for most people. But
I agree.
I think yoga addresses so many subtle things like that, where you are actually a very active participant. And then once you're doing that, and you're like, oh, when I do this, I feel better. When I do this, I'm less depressed. When I do this, I'm less anxious. When I do, you know, when I breathe this way, these things happen for me. Then, you know, the world's open to you. You can make choices. You can make better choices about your lifestyle, or even, you know, better clarity on which doctor to see. But it all starts with the person, right? Being, having agency and being clear. And that is often missed, like in Western care. So
absolutely,
that's why I'm a yoga therapist and not a doctor right now.
Well, and I love the agency over your own process. And I think we've talked about this in some of our other interviews with other yoga practitioners and teachers, where it is, you know, what do you learn about yourself on the mat? What do you learn you can do? Where do you push your boundaries more? Which is all very well and good, but I think this agency over your own process is such a to the point, to the heart of the matter, that it does take you out of this, I don't know, I just do what they tell me to do kind of spin. One of my favorite kind of acknowledgments that I make to my patients, and I heard from another doctor, was I may be an expert on, and for me, the musculoskeletal system and rehab and all that stuff, but you are the expert on your body. So we have to do this together, because no one will be as much of an expert on your body as you are. And that agency gives you so much direction.
And that's the primary, as a yoga therapist, I mean, it's the relationship is so important to the process because we don't actually do anything. I mean, that's the interesting, you know, we don't literally don't do anything. And when I teach, people are like, oh, how can I help this person? I'm like, you don't really do anything. You have to remember, you're just an educator and helping someone hold their process so they can figure out what to do. And maybe you have some ideas or some experience or, you know, this particular training. So here's 12 ideas for your autoimmune disease that might work. But as you know, right, you never know. I don't know how breathing practice is going to affect you until you do it. I have no idea. And it's very different than prescribing.
Let's talk a little bit more about kind of, so what is yoga therapy in that sense? You know, how is it different than just that the power flow class that you're going to drop into on Saturday morning because you got time versus, you know, digging into this and what a yoga therapist does? I'd love to talk more about this idea of suggestion and participation.
Yeah. So yoga therapy is specific in that it's like the application of all those yoga techniques to a condition or to a person, really. The condition isn't even the right way to say it, but we do think about conditions and we are trained in, you know, enough Western ideas that, you know, you might come in and say, oh, this is what I have wrong with me. What do you got? So we, as a yoga therapy community, we have some research, and then we have some frameworks we use the same way an acupuncturist might, where you come to the yoga therapist, you're like, here's the issue, and then we make suggestions. And when we talk about yoga in the yoga therapy context, it's like the bigger yoga. So it's movement, breathing, meditational practices, some lifestyle components, and this sort of what seems more amorphous, but to a yoga therapist, it's not, spiritual side of things, which includes our connection to other people, which we know from Western work is super important for health outcomes. So we just look at all that through a health outcome lens. So people come for sessions, they get ideas, we make a plan together. You know, I teach people things they can do that maybe they haven't done before. Maybe they do those things for 3 weeks, they come back. And we figure out whether that was a good idea or not. And that's basically what yoga therapy is. So it looks very different. And I do have to say that different yoga therapists are trained in really different ways. So it would be a mistake to say it's one thing. Like if you go to our school, you're going to have a certain way of doing things. And if you go to a different school, I mean, there's similarities, but two yoga therapists aren't the same. That makes it important to find a yoga therapist that matches your needs.
I was going to say, and that's kind of true across the board in all therapies. I mean, there are so many, when you talk about cognitive therapy, there are so many different branches and theories and philosophy. And the research across the board shows that it matters less the practice of the therapy you're receiving and more that interpersonal connection with the therapist. You know, is this person listening and engaging with you? Which goes right back to your point of, you don't really do anything but hold that space for change.
Right. And experience helps. There is something to a yoga therapist who can say, you know, I've worked with, you know, 40 people with the condition you have, and 37 of them have really benefited from this practice. So I'm going to suggest you try it. You don't have to, but you might want to do that. So there's that piece too. So I think together they're like super powerful for sure.
And I love it. Yeah. And it's the wisdom of experience. And I think that's where asking for help and sort of this American ideal that is, it's slowly changing. I think particularly with the millennial generation making therapy, you know, very, very in vogue, very different, is that it's okay to ask for help. Because it really honestly breaks my heart when I have a patient come in and say, I have been on my own trying A, B, C, D, E, F. And I'm sitting here going, I'm like, but it's W. You would have gone all the way through until this very last one and finally found it after I don't know how long, how much money. And someone with the experience of having treating and seeing this before is going to say, 37 people have benefited from this approach. Maybe start there. And see how it does for you. Just having that lens of experience, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time.
Yeah. And you know, we see that a lot with trauma and mental health concerns mm-hmm. in our field, where people have just really not, you know, had that opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of get that W given to them and be like,
all the way there.
This tends to work pretty well. Like, you can do it in your own way, and, you know, we can tweak this in a lot of different ways, but this tends to work. You know, it's an interesting thing. It does take a long time for systems to change. So I'm pretty sure right now, I mean, my perception of it is many people in the Western medical system think yoga is a great idea. Like, this is what I've noticed. Like, every doctor you talk to is like, oh yeah, I always tell my patients to go to yoga. And I always say, no, tell them to go to yoga therapy, where, you know, we've thought about this stuff a little more. If you send them to the hot power yoga place, you know, for their lupus, I don't think it's going to go well, you know, but it's just like, we're still in the infancy. But like you said, the millennials have a totally different take on stuff. Mm-hmm. They are wide open to things. Yeah. So that's lovely.
Like, let's see, coming, you know, having this generation where it is about personalizing and seeing what I can do for myself. Now, that really gets to the heart of, you know, what it is to heal. Is this personalized approach to life and care, which, now, I'm a millennial, but we got a bad rap for that a handful of years ago, trying to come up and trying to make everything personalized, but we're here, we infiltrated, you can't get rid of us. Because I like what you said, it was very tongue-in-cheek and kind of a throwaway statement during your introduction. But when you started talking about, you know, treating people with obesity and eating disorders, and it turns out they're people too, that there is so much more depth than just this language of a condition. And I think the old model says, I see this condition, and until you make this condition disappear, I don't really care. I don't care, but I don't see the person underneath it. And as a patient in that system, you might feel like they don't care about the person underneath it, versus the way you're talking about is treating the person versus the condition. We dive into that nuance.
Yeah. And my own experience was that's how I even got there, mm-hmm. where, you know, I had this disease. Mm-hmm. And literally, I mean, I was fortunate to have a hematologist who was older. He was like in his 70s. He was like on his last, you know, probably his last few years of working. And he said, well, you know, usually people don't do well. They go blind, they lose their this and that, you know. So I'm, yeah, of course, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. He's like, but some people don't. And he told me a story about somebody who, like, just kind of did what I did, basically, like, left. And then he came back to get his blood taken. And, like, by all his blood markers, he really wasn't doing that great, but he was swimming like 2 miles a day and he felt fine. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, that kind of inspired me to, like, think about it differently, because I had never thought about it like this. And, you know, he's like, you never know. It's like, maybe my particular thing was having antibodies to your own red blood cells, basically. So my body's eating red blood cells, so I can't get any oxygen, right? But he's like, but of course you could make a lot more red blood cells. That's one option. Another option is those antibodies could go away. Like, who knows, basically? Nobody knows. And it just kind of blew my mind open. Like, oh, so if nobody knows, then nobody knows what's going to make this a better outcome. So what if I just did something to make myself healthier? Like, what would happen? And nobody has the answer to that. And it turned out it totally worked. I'm not saying that would work for everyone, but it worked for me. And now in retrospect, I'm like, oh, well, I had an anxiety disorder. I had a terrible diet. I hadn't, like, relaxed in the last 8 years, you know, like all these things, you know, what would happen if I did those things? That's not exactly what I was thinking at the time, but that's basically what I did.
In the moment, it's usually more colorful, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was forced, you know, I was forced, I couldn't do anything. So I had this, like, amazing opportunity. Like, who is going to do 8 hours a day of yoga nidra? Unless forced, like, hardly anyone. But I had this like interesting experience, and I was like, oh wow, that practice totally basically cured me. Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
Yeah. Well, I love this phrase. This is going to be one of my new favorite phrases. What if I just did something to make myself healthier? Yeah. What if we just did that?
What would that be like?
What would that be like? And it's, I mean, we're talking in this kind of irreverent tone, which I just love. You're my people. And, but it is true, because this is not the place we dive into healthcare. You know, this is, what are my outcomes? What are the tests? What are the things that say? And particularly in autoimmune disease, so few of them are well understood. There are so many orphan diseases in autoimmune where it's like, oh, you're one of five people who have had this happen. I don't know what to do with you. But even the autoimmune diseases that we quote unquote understand, we don't understand well enough to bring them into remission, or we don't understand those either. So I love this idea. Like, well, if nobody knows, then what's the harm in getting healthier? And why is that? It's the ridiculousness of why this isn't just what's being said. So we don't know, but if you're healthier, I don't know, you're going to be healthier. So that's got to be good, right?
And you know who's proving that? There's a doctor, mm-hmm. Dean Ornish, who's super famous. He actually mm-hmm.
yep.
was the doctor that discovered you could reverse heart disease. So if you don't know his story, mm-hmm. he basically, same ashram I started at, he was like a yoga guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he basically put a bunch of people in a room and had them do yoga, eat a vegetarian diet. And I would say hugs, but they have like support groups and stuff, you know, connect with each other. Yeah. And people's heart disease reversed. And so he's been doing this for years. And so he's a doctor, and because he's been doing it so long, he's one of the few people that really gets like money, like a few million bucks mm-hmm. to study something. And the last time I heard him talk, and this was just so interesting to me, he said, oh, we were doing the same thing for prostate cancer. And it turns out that it like switches off all these genes that are bad for prostate cancer and turns on all these genes, you know, the protocol we were using. And of course, we're all like, well, what's the protocol? And he's like, yoga, it's like not even a vegetarian diet. It's like a mostly vegetarian diet now. You know, it's not even like, that like hardcore.
A not processed crap diet.
Yeah, no, it's literally, yeah, like totally yeah. just like a clean diet, but nothing hardcore, nothing people couldn't do. And making sure people have connection and are getting together and, you know, mm-hmm. feeling hope. And, but now they can see like, oh, wow, this is totally changing gene expression. You know, so my, mm-hmm. when I was sitting there in that conference, this is a couple of years ago, I was like, this is amazing. This is what everyone needed to hear. Because for me to say, do yoga nidra an hour a day, you know, I'm thinking I've done this long enough and seen enough people with lupus that I bet you'll have less flares. It sounds crazy until you look at it like that. So there is science, mm-hmm. you know, it's mm-hmm. just sort of like baby science. It's not quite where we want it to be yet. But it's not random. It's not random. Like all these like mm-hmm. last 1,000 years of people doing these types of things and then getting better is not mm-hmm. random, you know? They definitely work on some level. But I think in our culture, we always attack our disease states when they're already at the end point. So it's a bigger ask. So my story is fun. You know, it's a fun story. I actually died on the table. You know, it's a fun story. It's like, wow, big story, you know, like, so it's a good story, but for most people, what happens, right, is they slowly decline and, you know, we're busy and we're bringing up our kids and working. And if you get that yoga in, even mm-hmm. during the decline, things are going to get a lot better usually.
Yep.
But it's really hard to prove out, right? If you take a whole bunch of people in some pretty bad positions and then try to intervene mm-hmm. with anything, it's very difficult to make them mm-hmm. better. And you're kind of left with pharmaceuticals at some point because you just need something so potent, right? That
right.
you don't die.
Yeah. Well, you get to the point where it's a race against time. Like, do you yeah. have time to do 8 hours of yoga nidra to make a difference before you die?
Or even like, learn, over a period of 12 weeks how to meditate. Like, it doesn't have yeah. to be 8 hours a day, right? But you do need 45 minutes a day where you could be conscious and sitting up, say. And you mm-hmm. might not have that if you're really, really, really sick. So I think our superpower is probably in the middle somewhere. Not that we don't do mm-hmm. really sick, but
right.
that's where we're strongest, you know.
But that, and that's where our biggest opportunity is. And you're right, but that's what our whole system has really been geared towards. You know, all of our blood work, all of our within normal limits or not is, okay, you're normal, you're almost dead. And where is this gray zone? Like even pre-diabetes doesn't get really acknowledged or given useful things to deal with. I think that's changing a bit now. So I'm a little jaded on this reference, but it's not changed.
Yes. You are absolutely right. Yeah. People don't, doctors are trying to screen for it. But for years, mm-hmm. I was like having blood sugar crashes. I was like passing out on the subway. And I went to the doctor and they're like, you're fine.
Yeah, you're right. You don't have diabetes, so we don't have an end stage intervention, so you're fine.
You're fine. And lose some weight.
Yeah, you're good. I'm not gonna tell you how. Just do it. And we need that audacity to say, I'm not quite fine, but I'm not in an emergency state, and I am worth doing something different about it. You know, because, you know, I just love, like, it was fun. I died on the table.
I really like that you put it that way, though, like that I'm worth it. Like, this time is well spent. Like, this mm-hmm. is one of the things you learn through practicing yoga in any tradition is that, like, your spiritual life, you know, whatever that mm-hmm. means to you, is important and is related to your health. And related to everything else. And it's not like this extra thing that you tack mm-hmm. on at the end of the day. And any really religious person could probably tell you that. Mm-hmm. But I think most people, you know, at least in our culture, they don't see it that way. So, mm-hmm. you know, taking care of yourself, treating your body, you know, people say stuff like treat your body like it's a temple, but it's good advice, mm-hmm. right? Like, treat yourself well, like it's important. And it's not, you don't just get the health outcome. You know, it's all integrated. Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. And that you are worth it. Like, that's actually one of your jobs on this earth, is to know yourself. I mean, that's what us yogis would mm-hmm. say. And so if you take an extra hour here and there to do that, it's super time well spent, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, and then the trade-off becomes it's not something you like really know and really appreciate until you've been in the moment of that trade-off. Of, you know, what's an hour here and there versus can't get off the floor for 3 weeks. That hour, the cost of that hour is so much less. And that exchange process in valuing our own health needs to be reckoned with and changed in our own personal philosophies, I think.
Yeah, they say when they do studies on like people at work, like most people do, I think mm-hmm. it's like 3.5 hours a day or something. It's like they're there 8 hours, but they don't work most of the time. Which makes complete sense, right? Nobody can mm-hmm. always be doing something. Mm-hmm. And so that time factor, it's just, I mean, that's like sort of the business we're both in, right? Like helping people mm-hmm. figure out, you know, the economy of it all. And so as a yoga therapist, I'm not telling people to do 8 hours of yoga a day, you know, and to be fair, if that had happened to me and I had had 2 kids like I do now, I don't know if I, you know, I probably wouldn't have done that, right? I wouldn't have been able to, mm-hmm. but finding enough time to make yourself well is definitely in most people's, you know, power. It's just it's more of a mindset thing. And I don't want to mm-hmm. say that in a, like a super bougie way where I don't understand that people have 3 jobs and children and life is hard, mm-hmm. but I've worked with a lot of people like that. And it turns out mm-hmm. very small changes, you know, and can make a huge difference in their health. Mm-hmm. So.
And the stories aren't as eye-catching, you know, there's nothing really phenomenal about, you know, Susie meditated with 5 deep breaths in between her shift change and her anxiety decreased, which very much does happen. But also that's
all the time.
Like, that's the story. That's it.
It's not going to be the first thing in the New York Times, you know, health section. Yeah, for sure.
Ooh, clickbait. What did that 5 breath do? So then thinking really practically then, because I think particularly in your specialty of starting with obesity and eating disorders and autoimmune as well, because I know chronic disease in and of itself sort of becomes a identity, sort of becomes this thing we have to carry around with us forever. Where does your work with your clients start to say, you know, there's a human hiding underneath all of this?
I think I think the main thing there is, you know, getting people out of their overwhelmed states. And mm-hmm. so I think you're, you know, we all attach to ideas, but when you're under a lot of stress, which you always are if you have any kind of disease state, right? You know, you're not able to think clearly. So we have words for that from Ayurveda and yoga therapy, you know, but the easiest way to say that is you can't think straight. And you're not able to really like be aware in a way that's benefiting you the most. So your decision-making is definitely altered and what mm-hmm. you're seeing is altered. And since you asked in the obesity and weight loss work, you're dealing with almost everyone with huge amounts of body dysmorphia, huge amounts of like self-esteem stuff that's come from that. And so the mind is telling us things that aren't even true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of my favorite stories from working with obese people involve people who haven't. I have stories where people lost 200 pounds and like that's all like the clickbait stuff. But the best yep. stories, honestly, are people who become like, you know, they come in, they have 100 pounds to lose. They're depressed. They're not doing great. I'm thinking of somebody right now, you know, they lose 35 pounds, you know, get a new haircut and a sweater and they walk in right one day. And they're like a different person, you know, like their vibe is different because the practices have worked and mm-hmm. they're no longer attached to their story so much. So I have this one story I like to tell because it was early when I was working. That's so amazing. But this one woman, she was like in her like 30s. She had never dated anyone. She was obese. She had a bunch of medical problems. And so we worked together for a while and it was that kind of story where she lost some weight. It wasn't like, you know, she looked better, you know, she lost some weight. And I say she mm-hmm. looked better because that was one of her goals. It's not my judgment, mm-hmm. but like, you know, yeah. people want to look better. But she lost some weight and she started getting more confidence. And in the time I worked with her, I watched her from this like introverted kind of person, you know, depressed person to getting married. Like I watched that process happen, you know, and it's mm-hmm. not like she lost because, you know, anyone would still say, oh yeah, mm-hmm. she's definitely an obese person. You know, it's not like something changed, but she was way healthier and mentally she was like mm-hmm. completely different. And like those stories are the ones that really always like strike me like, oh wow, you're mm-hmm. out of your story. You're out of your attachment to this thing. And I still know mm-hmm. her and she still works on stuff. You know, she still has stuff with her weight. It's not
yeah.
like, she's free and just flowing around like, yay, you know, I'm super psyched. I'm over. It's not like that, but she's, you know, she became a much happier person and, mm-hmm. you know, that can happen for anyone. And whether it's that or like an autoimmune disease, it's like, you're not, lupus is not who you are. You know, it's a description yep. of something you're experiencing and that's it. You know, and so when we work with people, we try to, especially with conditions like that, you know, we're always looking at, can we get somebody to experience this less? So that's mm-hmm. when we start. We're not going for cures. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people cure themselves and sometimes they don't. But if you're telling me, you know, 4 times a month you have migraines, then my goal as a yoga therapist is to see if we can make that too. Like from day one, that's what I'm thinking, you know, and what can you mm-hmm. do yourself to make that happen? And when people have that mindset and they detach from the story of like, I'm someone who gets migraines versus someone who doesn't, it's like mm-hmm. magic. All sorts of magic happens in terms of people's ability to help themselves.
Well, and that freedom that comes from within, you know, just coming out of this binary way of thinking about the world, yes, no, on, off, have, don't have. But to be within an experience, like I'm trying to think of an example of someplace else in our life where, you know, we do experience something, but it's not the whole story of who I am. And I'm coming up empty handed here, but if you've got an idea, but that is what the underlying idea of health really turns into. And I think that we have that societally, we have this ongoing idea that health is to be without hurt, without disease, without fatigue, without. And I think certainly over the last year and a half, we've had this yes or no throughout the pandemic. You're sick or you are not. Or if you're right. not, you, might be. And it really feeds into this idea of I'm either always going to be healthy or it's going to be sick and it can't be anything in between. And instead having this idea of I have more resiliency or I have less experience of things that are distasteful for me, yet there is still that process through. That underlies health and healing to me as a doctor and as a human who has had to go through health and healing trials.
Right. And yeah, and I think, you know, that's really well put. And, you know, it's more the ability to like be a little more expansive, right, in your awareness mm-hmm. of what's happening for you. So I think, again, when you have illnesses, like you identify with them and then, you know, you're stuck with that experience. That experience is like the forefront in your mind. Those migraines, right, are in the front of your mind so much that you might like forget about the other experience you're having or not notice them, which is kind of yoga in a nutshell. You know, how do you deal with duality? You know, how do you deal with good and bad at the same time? And how can we get better at that? And I think people, you were looking for example before, I think a good one would be like work, you know, where people, you identify with your work and that's who you are and everything's sort of based on your work going well and you doing your work. And then maybe you become a workaholic because you've just, you know, the story is that that's the most important thing, you know, you and your work and your work and your work. And then something goes bad in your work. And then that causes you like a lot of stress. And then that stress makes you sick. Because your viewpoint was not wide enough, right, to handle it. So I think that might be a good example of what you were talking about, where people kind of get locked into their story just all the time, right? Day-to-day stuff.
And it's a great example, too, because when we think about healing from workaholicness, you don't quit your job. Well, I mean, maybe someone needs to take a sabbatical and come back around to it, but it's not that you get to this point where you're saying I am a workaholic and I can never work again kind of thing.
Right.
It's that it's changing that expansive idea of self and saying, how can I be a person who works without being completely consumed by the behavior and one story of work being all that I am?
And then of course, you know, as you know, and most people know that, you know, when they're not caught up in it at the moment, turns out you're better at your work, you know, when you do that. So like your health outcomes are better and your work's better, you know, and you know, now the words like work-life balance, which is such a weird thing because, you know, work is your life. Like it's part of your life, you know, I don't know how we got there. But it turns out, that everything's better, including your health outcomes. So, you know, I will add, this might be interesting that a lot of yoga therapy is, you know, there's the learning process of it. And there's also another side of it, which is kind of like an antidote to things we do to ourselves. So the easiest example would be like sitting at a desk all day. Right. So I better do some yoga. Right. So and I think it's important because yoga therapy does take into account the way we live. And so like you were kind of just saying, like, not everything is pleasant and ideal. So as yoga therapists, at least I'll just speak for myself as a yoga therapist. Like, I like to acknowledge that, but like there's parts of your life that are not ideal. And like, that's not necessarily even a problem that you work at a desk. So, you know, a lot of people are like, you shouldn't the work stand up to do all these other things. It's like for most people, they
can't. Then you're smoking.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're going to work, you have a desk, there's nowhere else to work, you know. And what I would say as a yoga therapist is like, you know, but there's antidotes to that, you know, there's things that you might want to do because you've been hunched over a desk. But I think that's the same through mental health, through all the other layers, you know, like, sure, you can't think about your, spiritual well-being 99% of the time. I get it. You're busy, you know, but there is that 1% that needs, you know, a little cultivation to be a healthy person. I don't know, that just occurred to me while you were talking about that kind of storyline people have.
Well, and the duality that you bring up is so impactful and so powerful too, because, you know, doing your work at the desk and okay, the mechanism of sitting at the desk, I was just talking to a patient who is working and going to school and she's sitting at her desk for 15 hours a day. And that's a lot. And that's a lot to have to come back from. You know, it's too much of a dose. But I find that when I am working on the book that I am writing, and I am not sitting at a desk and sitting with good ergonomics and good posture, that I get lazy and I can't focus and I write less. So in that moment, sitting at the desk is a crucial aspect of my creative process and producing something of value, if only for myself, but I do hope for anybody who will read it.
Well, hopefully it's
it only for hopefully, hopefully somebody reads it. I got all you listeners, you'll buy in right now. But that it will... It is a production of something. What it is not doing at that time is producing body movement. But we can't be everything all the time. Right. And instead of acknowledging that duality, we are, you know, creating the good, bad, do, don't do. Not, okay, so you sat for 5 hours. Good. You wrote a bunch of pages. Nice job. Now go move.
Yeah.
There's no shame in that.
Yeah. And keeping your awareness wide enough also that you, mm-hmm. you want to. So you start yeah. to desire what is the best for you, given your circumstances,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So what are some really practical, can you leave us with some practical ideas or practical questions for our listeners that if this is resonating with them and they're seeing like, ah, yes, duality, what is this thing? Where can we go? How can we start to look for that in our lives as we're thinking about doing more and experiencing life more broadly?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I think what I would say is it is difficult to do that without some sort of practice. So this is a yoga answer, and you're talking to a yoga person. There's probably other answers. But without a practice and without creating a little bit of space, it is very mm-hmm. difficult for your mind to be aware enough, to evaluate enough, to do like what you just said. We're sort of like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm at the desk now. I'm going to move. Like you might not be there because your mind, your brain, literally hasn't had enough the kind of space to process that. And I think that's what makes yoga so potent. People often like they go to a yoga class and they get taught how to like breathe and move around a little, but you know, the thing they mostly get out of it is that clarity, right? They come, they're like, I feel so much better, like in my mind. Like, you know, it's like I walked outside and it's all sunshine because like I got out of my blinders for a minute. So, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of actionable steps, I think to learn to do like a practice that like works for you and mm-hmm. any practice would do. I mean, just in a general way, any practice would do, but now I'm going to pitch something because it's free, if you don't mind.
So, I love it. Go for it.
So we have a course called the Radically Balanced Yogi, which is literally, it's on your own time, but you can join it from our website and it'll walk you, you know, through a 6-week, like how to build your own personalized yoga practice. That's not super time consuming. That's my point. It's just for regular people who want to do yoga. And it's not walk you through like, this is how you do a sun salutation. This is how, I mean, there's some of that so you can do things. But it's more walk you through, you compare different types of things and you walk out with like, this is the way I need to move. This is the way I should breathe. This is the way I should do some sort of contemplative practice that would work for me so that I can get out of, I mean, that is the goal of yoga, get out of duality a little bit and make better choices. Mm-hmm. And like, as we've discussed, I think that's kind of like the key to better health because you need, mm-hmm. you know, people often say like, oh, my intuition's telling me this. And sometimes I kind of chuckle at that, but it's like, sure, it's your intuition, but it's also just you. Like, it's just your you. You're just, you're awake for this moment and you're realizing your elbow hurts. And you're realizing it hurts because you're using your mouse all day. And you're realizing maybe you shouldn't do that. And so yeah. it's kind of like that process over and over and over and over again in subtle ways, right? Where all mm-hmm. of a sudden you're hearing and feeling and noticing things and you're kind of out of that duality for a moment and you start making better health choices. And I don't mean to diminish the work that I do even because we work with people with some pretty serious stuff I know you do too. But even if you're in a really bad position, you know, in terms of your personal health, having some sort of practice that lets you kind of pull away from that for even a second and make a couple of choices can be really life-changing. So I think that's what I would kind of put out there at the end of this conversation.
Awesome. And we'll share a link for that, that offering in the show notes, as well as you can come find it. We'll link it over in our social media channels. Just search for Healing Ground Movement in Facebook and Instagram. But I love this offering because it's not just like, this is, you know, let's do the challenge of getting up to 20 sun salutations by the end of the month or whatever. it's personalized, you know, what do you need? What is going to help shift your everyday experience into something that is a little bit broader, a little bit wider, and fits in the experience that you're having? And I think it's really easy to throw away like, oh, he's being hyperbolic, to say, even if it's just for a second. And I want to go circle back around and highlight, no, literally, even if it's just for a second, do it.
Yeah, no, I meant that literally. I meant that literally. And it's not that you might not need, you might need more. I don't know you, listeners. I don't know who's listening. But you have to start somewhere, and you have to have a moment. Each moment, right, leads to our next moment. And having 3 seconds of clarity leads to 6 seconds, leads to 12, leads to maybe even an hour, which was a lot for most people, including myself. You know, most of my day, I don't walk around being like this super clear, enlightened being who understands all things about myself and my health. But when I go to make lunch, you know, my practice is such where I say, oh, that's probably a better choice. You know, this is a better choice. Whatever that is,
yeah.
I don't know. It could be anything for you. so that's helpful.
Yeah. And having that expansion, I like, and just to draw on this one more thing is when you talked about, you know, people saying following their intuition. And I think it is really interesting. And we had a really great conversation about intuition with a couple of folks a few months ago now at the beginning of the summer, where intuition is entirely based in science and quantum physics. Like, this is a part of our experience. So the idea that we have taken intuition out of our personal experience, that oh, that belongs to someone else, that belongs out there. It is the synthesis of knowing and processing all of the data of our lives to say, this feels like it's the right choice for me. And we don't have to do it all up here in our frontal lobe and know that A plus B plus C is an A. Our brain is going, I have processed all the things. This is what you need to do. And we've turned numb to that in such a loud way that I have patients coming to me saying, you know, my elbow hurts in this way. And when I stretch it, I don't know, intuitively, it just feels better, but I'm probably messing it up. No, you're listening to what your body is telling you to do. That's the practice. And that's what we're going to learn here. And that's what you need to learn in yoga therapy too.
I love that. I love it when I get to say to people when I'm working with them, they say, this makes it hurt less. And you know, of course you say, well, you should do that then. You know, there's nothing else to say. Even if it seems strange to me, I say, well, you should do that then, like, you know, unless there's a really good reason not to. But yeah, and people have definitely like given over their agency, right, to other things and in our culture. And, you know, there's some upsides to all the many upsides to all the things that have happened in that way. But that is the downside, where people don't feel like they have any power over their own health and healing. That's not true.
Yeah. When they're coming to a doctor or practitioner saying, so what should I do? And the answer really boils down to, if it hurts, don't do it. And if it feels good, do that. And you know, I'm being tongue in cheek. We really do get very specific and find that
we do use anatomy, you know, and
we have this training. We do have that, you know, I'm gonna help you jump to W. You don't have to know that A, B, C, D, and all of those hurt you. Like, well, I'm gonna help you get there. But to reinforce, you know what you're doing. Just start paying attention more.
Yeah. No, that's how we work too. And You know, the paying attention I found is what most people need help with in terms of being in a process to be able to do that. And we expect so much of ourselves, you know, we expect ourselves to be able to do things that we're not currently doing. And that's not fair. You know, that's not fair. It's like, it's okay that if you are not able to like know what your body's telling you, like that is not even unusual. I mean, that's pretty typical for someone who's been in pain, for instance. And so our job as yoga therapists is to help you get there so you can listen to what your body's telling you and like heed that advice in a way that's suitable for you. So sounds like me and you could hang out and talk about this forever.
Yeah, pretty much. And honestly, this is why I love doing the podcast. I just get to talk to all these incredible practitioners, incredible people who are out there doing this really simple but powerful work of returning agency to our clients and patients, of teaching that anything worth doing perfectly is worth doing poorly. You know, start with the few minutes that aren't good enough to you in your space, in your headspace right now, because it will add to more. And it's the practice. And then that practice tells you more of what you need and more of what impact is going to happen in your life. And from there, you are slowly building that snowball to health. It's going to just keep rolling up, rolling down the hill.
Couldn't agree more.
That's what we need. That's what we need. Well, Brent, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience and sharing this just really beautiful practical nuggets of wisdom of just where to start and where to start small. You know, I've noticed over and over again, we can have, and people collect the podcasts of, you know, this is how I count my macros. This is how much water is optimal, or I can get hydration from these foods or. And it all stays up here. It all stays in the planning and I have learned things stage. And what I love about conversations with people like yourself, it's that all of that matters nothing if you don't start with those 3 seconds of breathing, experiencing yourself a little bit more fully to know which one of those options is going to be appropriate for you.
When we do our obesity seminars, everyone walks in, of course, no one has any idea what's going to happen to them. And we get everybody to lay down and we take them through like a simple little, exactly that, like this pause moment, which is shocking for most people. But the message, we do it on purpose for that same message. It's like, this is where it starts. You know, this just few minutes of paying attention to yourself is where, you know, your path to where you want to go begins. So I really appreciate you kind of wrapping it like that.
Thank you. I appreciate you. And I appreciate all of our listeners for tuning in today. I hope that there were a few great nuggets that you got to take away from this conversation. Brent, if people want to learn more about you and more about your practice and how they can dive in, where can they find you?
Sure. It's breathingdeeply.com. So that's our school. And if you land there, you'll find a lot about becoming a yoga therapist. But if you sift through, you'll find that free program. We have a practicum if people need free help. Actually, where our advanced students work with people. So breathingdeeply.com is the home of everything we do.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you. And thanks again to all of our listeners. Have a wonderful rest of the day. And we'll see you next week for another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.